This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 224. This episode was pre-recorded. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
It's time for more schooling. DCU Magic 103, by the gods. This is how I got my wife to read comics for Sunday, September 16th, 2012. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs. And you can subscribe via iTunes where you can leave us a review.
And you can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. We're taping this episode in advance because we have some commitments next weekend.
That's what happens when we do a DC Goes to School episode.
Right.
You always know that we're busy doing something else.
Indeed.
And haven't read the comics.
So, in terms of magic in the DCU, we've already covered the Homo Magi, the magic by genetics, and heroes with magic gadgets. So we're now going to cover the heroes with godly origins. And there's a lot of them. So, in fact, we're just going to hit the highlights here. And there may be additional episodes later of the 101 series with that. But the biggest one in the DCU is Wonder Woman. First appearance, All-Star Comics number 8, 1941. Of course, a member of DC's Trinity. Also known as the Amazon Princess, Diana Prince, or Princess Diana. Created by psychologist William Moulton Marston, who also invented an early version of the polygraph. Kind of like the magic lasso, to tell the truth.
So, did he create her for DC?
Yeah.
I wonder what he was doing, like, working for a comic book company.
Well, they actually brought him on as a, what do you call the term?
Like consultant?
A consultant. To kind of counter people's thoughts of, well, are comics bad for kids? Again, they were already starting this way back in the early 40s and worrying about that. And so he wrote these positive stories in, like, the Ladies' Home Journal and things like that about how comics are good for your kids. Of course, this same person, there's some evidence he was possibly kind of a polygamist, or at least he had a very open marriage, because his family's nanny, apparently, there was a relationship there as well as with the wife, and the family's nanny wore metal bracelets.
Like the princesses.
Mm-hmm. So anyways, she's from Paradise Island, later Themyscira. I've never had a really good handle on how to pronounce that. From this race of Amazons, all of which it originally had all the powers. And she just went off into man's world to fight the Nazis. But in the Silver Age, they really increased the godly origin of the character, where Queen Hippolyta had no children, of course, because there were no men, and Amazons were immortal.
So they didn't need replacement kids.
Right. So she really wants a child, so she creates a clay figure on the beach. And the Greek gods show up and imbue the figure with life and give it powers. And as usually used for the character for most of the Silver Age, beautiful as Aphrodite, wise as Athena, swift as Hermes, and as strong as Hercules. And she gets the bulletproof bracelets, the lasso of truth, the golden tiara, and the invisible jet. So she gets lots of gadgets.
So sometimes she can fly, and sometimes she has a jet.
And sometimes she just rides the wind currents. For a long time, she just did that and didn't actually fly. Her storyline and origin has been changed too many times to count.
And then there's the whole idea of Wonder Girl. Well, first of all, the first Wonder Girl,
right, was Diana as a younger girl.
Okay.
And then later they decided to make her...
Well, then there was, like, Donna.
Right, who was, they at one point said, was Diana's sister. And then they had various ways to try to explain her.
But so there have actually been a lot of people who have gotten powers from the Greek gods the same way Diana did.
Right. And in fact, there's a set of stories, bizarre stories, in the, I'm guessing, mid-60s, where through some weird time effect, Hippolyta, Wonder Woman, Wonder Girl, who was, again, Diana as a younger girl, and Wonder Tot, who was...
Wonder Tot.
As Diana as a baby, all fought together.
Oh. Oh, bizarre.
Robert Kaniger, you nut.
Okay.
Anyways.
Move on.
Moving on to Captain Marvel. His first appearance is in Wiz Comics number 2, 1940. From Fawcett Comics, a different comic book company, and in fact was one of the first titles from Fawcett. And an interesting little factoid here, that Fawcett was originally going to call Wiz Comics Flash Comics, but DC got to the name first. So, in any case, DC ended up crushing this company in court and the character of Captain Marvel because... They at the time were arguing anybody with a cape that flew was ripping off Superman.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, even though this character's origin is very different from Superman. So they fought them in court for years, but finally gave up, and in the end went into bankruptcy, at which point DC promptly bought the characters and then sat on them for probably 20 years and then finally decided to bring them back around 1972. So, the world's mightiest mortal, kid radio reporter Billy Batson, is lured into a subway tunnel and ends up at the Rock of Eternity, and it meets Shazam the Wizard. So, Billy's been chosen to be the champion of good. So, when he says, Shazam! He becomes an adult with the wisdom of Solomon, the strength of Hercules, the stamina of Atlas, the power of Zeus, the courage of Achilles, and the speed of Mercury.
So, did he actually get the powers from the wizard or from these gods?
The wizard Shazam gave him the powers that the original gods gave him. So,
okay.
The idea is that originally the wizard Shazam was the hero and now he's too old to do it.
So, if he got all these from the gods, wouldn't he be related to Wonder Woman somehow?
Well, at one point, there was some indication of that. There was a point in the late 80s. There actually was a miniseries called War of the Gods. It was one of the big summer crossover events where they really tried to indicate there was a major familial relationship between Captain Marvel and Wonder Woman. But they've kind of forgotten that since then.
Okay.
His sister later became Mary Marvel. In fact, there was eventually a whole Marvel family.
With Freddie and...
Yeah, Freddie Freeman, who became Captain Marvel Jr., and Hoppy the Marvel Bunny, and very fanciful stuff, 1940s. So once DC, as I mentioned, brought him back as a character in 1972, what do you do about the name?
Because now there's Marvel Comics.
Right. At the time, originally, there wasn't a Marvel Comics. Now there is. You're going to name your major competitor every time you mention the guy's name. And in fact, Marvel had their own Captain Marvel. So it went back and forth. At one point, they called the title Power of Shazam. And now the character, as they're just introducing him now as a backup story in Justice League, is now officially called Shazam. He won't be called Captain Marvel anymore.
Which is going to be a problem. Because he can't say
his name
is Shazam.
Because then
the lightning will come,
yeah.
And he won't be Shazam anymore.
Yeah.
Just nit, pick.
Right. Going by that, it's even weirder that Captain Marvel Jr., his secret word is Captain Marvel. It's not Shazam.
Okay.
Yeah. The Spectre. First appearance is in More Fun Comics number 52, 1940.
Hey, we just talked about the Spectre.
We did last week. So cop Jim Corrigan is killed in action, and the voice, because I don't think they wanted to really tie it into God directly, sends his spirit back to Earth to take vengeance against evil, usually did in a rather creepy way, and he fights various magic menaces back in World War II. He's a charter member of the Justice Society. But in the Silver Age, he basically becomes omnipotent. He becomes the most powerful figure in the DCU. And he was mostly brought in as this Deus Ex Machina character when a writer kind of wrote himself into a hole or a corner.
Hey, the Spectre can fix it.
In fact, I remember that there's a particular issue, I think it's a JLA-JSA crossover, where some bad guy is changing the dimensional frequency between the two Earths so they'll merge and then both blow up.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's somebody from Earth 3, you know. And in this case, there's this great shot of Spectre becoming the size of the Earth and literally pushing the Earth apart.
Ooh.
Now, in the Bronze Age, his vengeance really becomes gruesome. He turns the guilty into glass, into burning candles, just really creepy stuff. And then in the modern age, getting into really the 90s, he becomes the spirit of redemption with a more direct relationship with God. And finally, Jim Corrigan's soul finds peace. The voice, or God at this point, decides he's done enough, and so his soul goes off. And then Hal Jordan, who's dead at this point in the storyline, becomes a Spectre.
That was after Hal Jordan killed everybody, right?
As Parallax.
Yes.
So then when Hal returns as Green Lantern, this cop Crispus Allen takes over as the Spectre. And, as we just mentioned, he was just reintroduced as a character in the new DCU just this past week.
And it was Jim Corrigan.
Right. Now, mention the 1990s. In that period, DC went rather religious on some of the characters. I think this was a reaction to Spawn over an Image, the huge success of the Spawn character, which has a very direct relationship with religion.
I don't know, because I never read that.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
they went so religious, they even had an angel in the JLA, and he was Zariel. And his first appearance is in JLA number 6, 1997. He's a guardian angel that served heaven for millions of years, but then willingly fell to Earth to become a superhero. And his powers are flight, immortality, strength, a flaming sword, this sonic scream. And he joins the JLA in this battle and then becomes a member for several years and is later a member of Shadow Pact. We always go back to Shadow Pact a lot with these magic characters.
Yes.
Now, speaking of angels, we have Fallen Angel. And first appearance was in Fallen Angel number 1, 2003. Not really part of the DCU continuity, but was a DC title. And wasn't a Vertigo title, which is, frankly, rather strange. Created by Peter David. And it's this character that's trapped in Beta Noir, this city that shapes the world that we later learn turns out to be the biblical city of Enoch. So the main character is Lee, or Leandra, is, quote, the boss's favorite, God's favorite, an angel, who has super strength, this leaping ability, and an energy discharge. And there's evidence that Peter David intended to use this whole concept as Supergirl, as a rewrite of the Supergirl character, but DC refused to do that. But later, Peter David, at the time he was writing the Supergirl title, made Kara an Earth Angel. And there was a whole quasi-religious angel storyline going on there as well.
That was a weird storyline.
Yeah. And the Fallen Angel title later ended up going to IDW because DC kind of dropped it and there was a lot, very much bad blood between them and Peter David.
There was a little bit of crossover at some point between the DCU and Fallen Angel, wasn't there?
Not that I remember.
Hmm.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think so.
Just like very vaguely.
It would have been very vague. Maybe there was even a reference to explain why you didn't see the other heroes.
Well, because it wasn't a real city.
Yeah. Okay, then we have the Lords of Chaos and Order. Now, these are characters that over the years have been retconned into various characters' titles. Amethyst, Dr. Fate, Kid Eternity, Phantom Stranger, Hawk and Dove. We don't know whether the Lords of Chaos and Order are basically good versus evil or stagnation versus anarchy. It's not made very clear.
It's just they're both necessary.
Right. And they're continually been in battle since the beginning of time. And at one point, it was becoming one of the major stories in the DCU. I believe at some point in the mid-80s, that was like the Gods of Chaos and Order pretty much showed up in a lot of titles and a lot of references to it. We also have the New Gods, if you're talking about godly powers. First appearance was The New Gods, number one, 1971. This is all Jack Kirby's concept. And they're really their own mythology. And I could do a whole 101 episode on them, and I probably will at some point. Now, you can't forget the whole green versus red versus rot thing.
So that would be Swamp Thing and Animal Man and Maxine all get their powers from what are essentially the gods of nature.
Right, right. And that even ties into characters like Firestorm at one point was Avatar of Fire. You could hit a lot of characters at one point had quasi-godly origins, or you could even talk about Sandman's Endless if you're talking about gods.
But
again, that's another concept you could easily do a whole 101 just on that concept. So
maybe we'll talk more about the Sandman Endless when the new Sandman comes out.
That's a good idea. All right, so next time we do this, I think we're going to get into the villains that have some sort of magic capability, and there's a lot of them. Sorry, there's not going to be any Who's on the Cover this week because, again, we're taping this in advance.
Plus, last week, double issue.
Damn you, double issues!
Exactly.
All right, so I want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including my Star Trek Next Generation and Justice League animated series reviews. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.